Support for this public radio podcast comes from the Society for Human Resource Management, HR, leading people, leading organizations, online at shrm.org.
Who had inside information at the Wall Street Journal?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon. Here's a story that didn't make it onto the front page of today's Wall Street Journal. It's about that bid from Rupert Murdoch's News Corp for the parent company of the journal, Dow Jones. We reported yesterday that investigators are looking into an unusual spike in trading shortly before news of the buyout offer became public. Now it's been learned the Wall Street Journal itself sat on the story for at least a week. And the New York Times reports that's raised questions of who knew what and when they knew it inside the Wall Street Journal. Wall Street keeps dancing to the happy music. Not for 80 years has there been this kind of a winning streak for the Dow. It's been up in 24 of the last 27 sessions. Yesterday's gain of 48 points moved the Dow 0.33% higher to 13,312. The S&P 500 gained 0.25%. The Nasdaq was off a tiny fraction. The Senate Judiciary Committee is checking ID today. It's holding a hearing on the Real ID Act, which is designed to bring states in line with new federal standards. Even if you have a driver's license, it'll require that you get a new one if you want to use it to enter a federal building or travel on an airplane. But many states don't want to pay the costs, and Jeremy Hobson reports they're not getting much help from the feds.
The cost of Real ID is estimated to be between $11 and $23 billion. The money's needed for everything from screening Department of Motor Vehicles employees to printing new licenses. And the federal government has only given states $40 million to help them come into compliance. Molly Ramsdell is with the National Conference of State Legislatures.
We need to fix and fund it. But if we don't get the fix and fund by December 31st, then we will call for the repeal of it.
But a recent Zogby poll found that 70% of Americans want national standards for IDs. Neil Barrow is with the Coalition for a Secure Driver's License. He says safety and security should trump money issues, and states should be willing to pay.
But at the end of the day, if the feds have to pick up most, if not all, the tab, that's preferable to a slowdown in implementation.
The project is already slowing down. The White House has pushed back the deadline by 20 months. In Washington, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. By the Medtronic Foundation, celebrating women and women's health. Information and resources on women's health issues available at womenshealth.gov. And by the NASD Investor Education Foundation, helping inform today's investor. Online at nasdfoundation.org.
Ethanol may be king of the alternative fuels debate in Washington, but coal is hot on its heels. A Virginia lawmaker is proposing legislation today in the House that would lock in government supports for liquefied coal, which can be used to fuel cars and trucks. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Sam Eaton reports.
President Bush's State of the Union goal to produce 35 billion gallons of alternative fuels by 2017 has set off a feeding frenzy in Washington. A surprise contender is the coal lobby, specifically the Coal to Liquids Coalition, a new arm of the National Mining Association. Spokesman Corey Henry says coal should get the same attention and federal support as that political darling known as ethanol.
It's not really so much looking at ethanol and saying, hey, us too. It's really more of looking at, you know, America's future energy needs and saying we have a vital role to play in that.
Henry says the U.S. has centuries worth of coal reserves that could be used to fuel our automobiles. And according to a new government report out tomorrow, there are ways to reduce the high CO2 emissions associated with liquefied coal. But that comes at a high price. And critics say taxpayers shouldn't be the ones left with the bill. I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
The growing interest in ethanol as a gasoline replacement is fueling a spike in the price of corn. That's helping corn farmers, but pinching others who rely on low corn prices, such as exporters and livestock producers. To help bring prices down, some agricultural groups have been pushing the federal government to release millions of acres of land currently tied up in a conservation program. But as Minnesota Public Radio's Annie Baxter found out, there's little agreement that strategy would help.
Tony Thompson is walking along a dirt road at his farm in southwestern Minnesota with his dogs at his heels. Just a few miles up the road, a big ethanol plant looms like a giant.
Half of my corn goes into very local ethanol production.
After years of low profit margins on his corn crop, Thompson has been thrilled to see corn prices skyrocket due to what many farmers call the ethanol effect. But at the same time, Thompson has also been happy with his choice to enroll some of his land in the Conservation Reserve Program, or CRP. He gets paid to keep that land out of production. CRP is meant to prevent erosion and protect environmentally sensitive areas. Part of Thompson's CRP land helps filter the water running from his cropland down to a marshy area where toads sing. Using CRP lands for the benefit of water quality and wildlife makes Thompson proud.
I just happen to love the Great Plains, and this part of it is the part that I can influence with my own life's work.
But some ag groups want farmers like Thompson to ditch their CRP contracts and plant more corn to feed the ethanol giant. Problem is, the penalties for doing so are steep. So those groups want U.S. agriculture officials to waive the penalties. Kendall Keith, president of the National Grain and Feed Association, says land is at too great a premium right now, given high corn prices, to tie up acreage in the CRP.
If we're not going to let the CRP land come out, then the U.S. may have a difficult time competing in the export livestock markets where we've seen growth in the past.
But some ag experts say a lot of the CRP land wouldn't be suitable for growing corn. The chair of the House Agriculture Committee, Minnesota Congressman Colin Peterson, agrees. He says the CRP debate is a red herring. Peterson thinks the groups advocating for early release of CRP lands are mostly big exporter types who should get used to higher corn prices.
This is, in a sense, repricing agriculture. I think we've been selling our farm products too cheap.
For the time being, the U.S. Department of Agriculture will not allow early outs on CRP contracts because recent planting projections suggest farmers will plant enough corn to satisfy demand. But if those projections don't bear out, that could add fire to the CRP debate. In Bingham Lake, Minnesota, I'm Annie Baxter from Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon. We're always interested in hearing your thoughts. Click on the contact link at marketplace.org. And thanks for joining us this morning.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.